everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cosmos with Cosmos. And this episode is a High in the Sky edition. High in the Sky from our new location here in Oak Ridge, Oregon.
Still a work in progress, but what a couple of weeks.
But what's great is that, and I should have done, well, actually it was cloudy last night, is that for High in the Skies, we can go out and check out the night sky and actually see, like, stars and stuff and be able to, you know, share that.
And you know what we can do here? We can see the Milky Way.
We can see the Milky Way.
This is the first place that I've ever lived, and I don't want to speak for you, but you've probably ever lived where you can actually see the Milky Way at night. Of course, you got to go out for us at 3 in the morning. Because of just the orientation of the Milky Way and all that. Just this time of year. But, you know, come November, it'll be pretty high up. Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of high in the sky, let's get started with drinks. What are you drinking for this?
I'm going to look at it again. Oh, what is it? It is the Cygnus Summertime Fruit Tea. I don't know why I forgot that. The Cygnus Summertime Fruit Tea.
I mean, it sounds delightful. I mean, Cygnus is...
It's actually not bad.
Yeah? What's in it?
It is a strawberry kiwi vodka.
Oh.
Yes.
That'll make me just break out in redness.
It's a strawberry. With peach tea and a hint of lemon juice.
Ooh, just a hint.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds nice. It sounds lovely.
I have all the citrix. Yeah. It's very, but it actually tastes very smooth.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good. I would like a sip. Can I have a sip, please, sir, of your drink?
You may. Were you expecting me to?
I don't know. However, ooh.
It's smoother than I thought.
That's very nice, yeah. And it's not too sweet either.
No. But yeah, like, I mean, it's a peach tea, but it's supposed to be sugar free, so there's no.
Okay, well, it tastes good. It's really good. I am drinking a Venusian sour right here, which is basically it's just a whiskey sour, but it, you know, Venusian, and it has like little. Different, like, cloud layers for Venus, and it's all sulfuric acid clouds.
But the question is why? It's not supposed to have that.
I think it's, like, the lemon juice.
Yeah, I think it's the lemon juice.
It's, like, the pulp in the lemon juice.
Maybe because
maybe our lemon juice is not pulp-free.
Maybe
it's
not.
A little pulpy.
It's
a little pulpy. Oh, Jack's at the grocery store! Oh, you refuse to do self-checkout? We self-checkout all the time. We don't want to have to interact with anybody. We just want to boop, 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 get in and get out.
I do feel bad, though, because I feel like it takes jobs, but I cannot get over interacting with people. So.
Although, I get really annoyed at the self-checkout because it's like, it gives you all these errors when you don't have errors. Like, please reset.
Yeah, but that was in Utah. We're not in Utah anymore.
Well, it's like the Smiths, but anyway. Anyway! Whether you use self-checkout or not, follow us on all the things at Drinking Cosmos on Twitter and Cosmos with Cosmos everywhere else. CosmosCosmos.com. See us on Spotify, which Anchor FM is now Spotify Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, and listen to us wherever you're at, you know, grocery stores.
Whatever. Yeah, listen to us at the grocery store, on your drives,
On planes.
On airports. I forgot to move our little camera thing out of the way. Let me do that real quick.
What are you doing?
I'm just getting distracted by things.
All right. Well, focus. Right. You're not, we're out of focus.
Okay. Follow us on things. Also, check out Wildixia on Etsy, WildIXIA on Etsy for her cool artwork, and Ron at MrProctorShow.com. Ron Proctor does some cool stuff, talks about science, talks about life, talks about politics out there in the community of Waxahachie, Texas. And he's got some new stuff in the works.
Glad you said that.
Apparently, got some cool stuff going with Blender tutorials. I guess he's also going to be writing a book I saw, but I don't know really what it's about. But Mr. Proctor, doing his shit. And of course, you know, Jack, RollingBluffsPlanetarium.com. If you're in the Iowa area, Nebraska area, Midwest area.
Yeah, southwest corner of Iowa.
Then go to the Rolling Bluffs Planetarium and get a really awesome planetarium show from Jack.
But it won't be right now because he's at the grocery store.
He's at the grocery store, so he's not. No, no. And also, we have some rules or a little drinking game rules, if you will, if you hear any puppies bark. And new rules, since we have hardwood floors everywhere now, if you hear a cartoon sound of animals trying to gain purchase on a hardwood floor as they scurry, also take a drink.
Leia
or Leia just sliding into a wall. Oh my gosh.
It is so cartoonish. So I mean we had joked before we moved in that I want to see the dogs just do the whole cartoon thing. But they really do it.
We
gotta get some video. Before we do it, we have to get video.
We have some runners planned for outside of the office anyway. And also any Star Wars or
Lord of the Rings
references. We don't have Smeags, but we got Gandalf's.
Gandalf's.
Gandalf. We got Gandalf. We got Gandalf's staff over here.
That was still very southern.
It just happens. Anyway.
All right.
Everybody, are you ready?
That's funny.
You ready to get a little high? A little high in the sky.
I really like our new seat.
You really like this? It's our love seat that was, you know, we got it as a secondary like couch, but then we got two couches. And then we put this in our bedroom as just like a little seat to be in the bedroom.
That's where we always put our clothes.
And since Brandon is, you know, going to be, when he's not on assignment, he'll be most likely remote joining us. So I figured this seat would work well.
Mm-hmm.
And if he happens to be here when we're recording, then we can scooch. And he's thin enough. He can scooch.
No, it's not. We'll work it out.
Okay. We'll put him on a stool just over here.
Yeah.
I'll have a second camera on him. Anyway. Let's get high in the sky, everybody. The night sky, of course, visible at nighttime. Once the sun goes down, you can see things that are up there. Now, they're always up there, but the sun, the nearest star to us, is so bright. We just can't see any of that stuff. It illuminates our atmosphere, so all we see is, you know, blue skies or clouds or gray skies and clouds or...
Yeah, we've seen both.
We don't see the cosmos behind it until the sun sets. And then, even then, if you're in a city area, you know, you still don't see much because of all that light pollution.
True.
And all that light just...
What is light pollution? We don't experience that anymore.
Except for our neighbors up the way that are... Yeah, this house being worked on, they got flood lights that are shining kind of on our house. So, just the minor complaint of that. But... if you're up, if you're up in the early evening, if you're still awake, you know, when the sun is setting and after the sun sets, Venus, very bright in the western sky.
Very bright. Now, very nice.
Hanging out.
Very nice.
Yes. I don't know what phase Venus is in, but it seems pretty bright to be in a fuller phase. It goes through phases like our moon.
Yeah.
That we observe from our perspective, our place in the solar system being the third rock from the sun.
We should bring out one of the telescopes just to...
When it was clear, I want to take our small, we have a little small, like, what is that, like a 4-inch Celestron?
Yeah.
That's like manual, you know, you gotta, and I cleaned it, the inside, I cleaned the best that I could, just with like a duster, just cleaning the mirror off. So I want, when it's not cloudy, to take that out.
You'd want to bring it.
I know. I was like...
I told you.
You know what? The things that we should have brought, like a lawnmower, I was just like, oh, we don't have room. And it was just like, we never use it. But now we can use it because we have the skies to really use it at with thing.
I told you.
I know. Okay. So check out
I win that one.
Yeah.
I rarely win, but I win that one.
Now, we covered a lot of May stuff in our last High in the Sky. We did it early for May. So I guess this one's going to kind of be early for June, but we'll have another one in June. And we can talk more about the June stuff, or we'll just be early for August, or we'll just be ahead of the months.
Skip July.
I skipped July. Oh, I did skip July, didn't I? Let's see. As of recording this episode, it is May 21st, we have 1 month until summer.
Yes.
June 21st, exactly a month.
A month from today,
we'll have our summer solstice, and it will be summertime. That's wild.
Though it felt summer not too long ago.
Yeah, but now we have like kind of a gray.
It's fall now.
We have a nice gray fall day today. It's beautiful.
With it being only in the mid-60s.
But beginning in June, in the early morning skies, so before sunset, sunrise, that early morning twilight, the moon, Mercury, Jupiter, and Saturn will be in the east for you to check out. Actually, last night, we're coming right out of a new moon now, right?
Yeah, it was a nice, really thin crescent. Yeah,
just a thin crescent of a moon last night. In fact, skies are going to be crap tonight because it's cloudy, but when it gets clear, we'll get a good crescent. We can break that telescope out, too. A crescent moon is the best time to look at the moon through binoculars or a telescope. When it's full, it's not ideal. It's very bright. It does reflect a lot of sunlight, so you actually really should use a moon filter on any telescope.
Definitely you should use a moon filter.
Because it can still blind you and damage your eyes, like...
Yeah, no, it's not a permanent blindness. Don't think that.
Yeah, but it can
you do
really
that with the sun, yes.
Yeah,
but
it can really hurt your eyes. So you want to make sure you have proper safety. If you're looking at a full moon, but full moon isn't going to be, the moon's going to look flat because everything's illuminated. But when you have it in a phase, you have the line that distinguishes the dark side, basically. I'm getting there. You know, the shadowed side and the lit sunlit side. Is called the Terminator line. And what it does is you get these nice shadows being cast on the craters and the mountains on the moon. So you get a lot of texture and a lot of relief there. That really...
Looks 3D.
Yeah, it looks... I mean, and the moon is a 3D object.
It is.
So it looks... It just makes it look more realistic than, like, you know, you're just looking at, like, maybe a piece of paper taped to...
It's amazing what shadows can do.
Yes, shadows and highlights.
Yes.
You know, they're... I was trying to bump the highlights down for us, but it made our thing look weird just because we got a lot of highlights going on with the sunlight coming in. But anyway, so now the moon's a nice crescent. It'll be a nice crescent for about a couple weeks.
It'll
be like a half a moon.
Yeah,
in a week,
yeah.
And so then it'll be, you know, but it'll be a full moon in 2 weeks.
Yeah, in 2 weeks.
Because
yeah.
Four weeks is a lunar phase or a month, as we've joked before. A month.
So the first quarter is a little less than a week away. Mm-hmm. But go out tonight. You'll see a beautiful crescent. You'll be able to see Earth shine on it, which is the light bouncing off the Earth, illuminating the night side of the moon. And so you actually can see the whole thing. It's really kind of cool.
Earth shine. It is really cool. Like, reflected sunlight from the Earth.
Oh, I should have named my drink Earth shine. Oh, well.
Too late.
It is too late.
No name changes. Although, I think I did that last episode.
We did it last episode.
All right, speaking of your drink, though, Cygnus the Swan.
Yes. Right,
let's get into some constellations. Cygnus, springtime, summertime constellation, actually.
Yeah, part of the summer triangle.
Rising early in the evening now. Looks like a big cross in the sky. It is known also as the Northern Cross, which is an asterism. So not an official designation of a constellation, but kind of like a shape we make up that's a part of an official constellation, like the Big Dipper is part of the Big Bear.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Little Dipper and the Little Bear. So Cygnus the Swan, it is swimming through the Milky Way.
That's true.
Cygnus the Swan has a fun little heartwarming story behind it that we have told before in the show, but I'm going to let Mike just do a little recap of the story. You don't have to get so involved in the story. But I thought it would be fun to just throw in a little constellation story.
So originally she wanted to throw a curveball at me.
I don't play baseball.
And not tell me that I had to tell the story. But I looked at the thing.
Well, it was kind of, I put it in the notes and then I meant to tell you and then I kind of forgot about it because I got distracted doing other stuff.
All right, so all the constellations really kind of have stories behind them, for the most part.
Except for in the Southern Hemisphere, when then you get a lot of practical constellations, like Telescopium.
Microscopium. There's a fly.
Muca? Musca?
Yeah, something like that. Musca.
I wonder, maybe the fly has a story. Flies see some shit. I mean, they don't live long, but they see some shit. And literal shit.
Yeah, I was about ready to say. But anyway, so there's a few different stories behind Cygnus. One of them, there's you know, some rapey story with Zeus.
Well, there's always a rapey story with Zeus. Every story involving Zeus is basically a rapey story.
Yeah. there's a great Chinese, Japanese, Asian story about Tanabata. So we might tell that. In July.
In July, it's Tanabata season.
It's Tanabata, July 7th.
Tanabata.
And so we'll revisit that story because that's another another really good story.
Yeah.
So this story is actually also a Greek story. Not the rapey version.
No, it's a story of friendship.
It's a story of friendship, and I had a feeling that was the direction you wanted to go.
That is exactly the direction that I was wanting you to go with the story.
Because this is a children's show, right? No, it's a family show.
Is it? No, it's not. This is marked as not for kids when I put it on YouTube because of the drinking and the many F-bombs.
All right, so Cygnus and his buddy Phaethon,
I don't think I ever knew the dude's, his friend's name.
Phaethon.
Okay. Phaethon. I was just repeating it.
Oh, okay.
For my own.
All right. So Cygnus and Phaethon, they were racing chariots.
As you do. You know, I mean, what else are you going to do in ancient Greek times for fun? We got Fast X just came out. We're still racing cars. We're still racing cars, people. So nothing's changed.
Is that going to end? Can we finally say goodbye to Walker?
No, I'm sure there's at least 20 more years.
Because they had the perfect ending in one of the movies.
It's a moneymaker. Yeah. People are going to get it.
So anyway, Cygnus and Phaethon were racing chariots through the sky.
Oh! Yes. That's fun.
Yes. And so they're racing them through the sky. And they got a little too close to the sun.
Oh, they Icarus did a little bit?
Just like Icarus. Oh, and man. So it basically broke their chariots. And so they go plummeting down. And Phaethon crashes into the river Eridanus.
Oh, which is also a constellation.
Which is. It's also the longest constellation that there is. And so he's at the bottom of the river.
Oh, no.
He's dead.
Is Phaethon... They're both human still.
Cygnus is immortal.
Oh.
Yes, he is the son of Ares.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Cygnus is son of Aries, so he's got a little bit of life in him.
Oh, he's got
Phaethon does not. So Phaethon has died.
Okay.
And Cygnus sees his best friend in the entire universe, entire world, crash into the river, sink to the bottom, lifeless, and he's on the bottom. And Cygnus wants to desperately pull him up and give him a proper proper burial, proper goodbye.
Yeah. Throw him on that funeral pyre.
Yeah, and so, but he can't do it. He can't do it. And so he's desperate, and he pleads with Zeus to turn him into a swan so he can dive down into the river and retrieve Phaethon from
the... Why a swan? I would think maybe like a dolphin or something that was a little bit more aquatic.
I don't know. But he chose a swan.
All right.
And so, he tells Cygnus, he tells Zeus that in return, he will only live as long as swans typically live. Which I don't know how long that is.
No, Google out there. How long do swans live?
Yeah, and so...
It's probably like 15 years. I don't know.
So he gets... so Zeus obliges him. He turns him to... grants his wish and turns him into a swan. Cygnus dives down into the river, is able to retrieve his best friend in the entire universe, and is able to say a proper goodbye to Phaethon. But the story does not end there.
Ooh.
Zeus, rapey Zeus, was so moved by this display of friendship and, love for your friends. Mm-hmm. And
romance.
Just the love that you would have for any really good friend.
Yeah, a friend-mance.
a friend mints, yes. And so he was so moved by that sacrifice that Zeus turns Cygnus into a swan.
But and places he's already him up. A swan, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. He places him up into the sky for everybody to look at Cygnus in the sky and to be reminded of that of friendship and that sacrifice.
And
that,
so he's flying through the, he's in the Milky Way.
He is in the Milky Way.
Which is the river of, across the sky.
Yeah, yeah. And come back to us in July when we tell Tanabata, which is also has a story about a river.
Yeah, that was more than I thought, because when I would tell, I gave basically the like Cygnus for Dummies episode in my planetarium shows, where I'd be like Cygnus was hanging out with his best friend fell in a river, dove in the river to save his best friend, and sacrificed his life, and because of this act of heroism and friendship, Zeus then placed him into the sky for all to.
But that's the story.
Yeah. real bullet pointed.
Yeah, so that's the story of Cygnus.
Sweet. I like that much better than the rapey Zeus ones.
Well, yeah. I mean, the rapey Zeus one has to do with Helen of Troy and well, Leda?
Well, either way.
Leda of Troy. Because she was the mom, and so Zeus was rapey with her, and he produced Helen of Troy, but also Castor and Pollux, which I believe we talked about in the past. And Yeah, so Zeus not a good guy.
So Zeus's rapiness almost basically started the Trojan War then, because...
Pretty much, yeah. Because I think that, like, Achilles is also related to somebody. I mean,
It's like the English monarchy. It's all just rapey and incesty. So, Cygnus, not only, as we mentioned before, home to Cygnus X1, which is the black hole... at the center of our Milky Way. Sagittarius A star. Yeah. Sagittarius in a completely different constellation. That's why it's called Sagittarius A star. Cygnus X1 black hole.
First discovered
black hole. That's the point of fame that my brain was trying to get to, and then was interloped by my brain being dumb. So, I exploded super glue all over my hands yesterday. Okay, so let's just... it's fine now, but... anyway.
I had gone... Where did I... Was that the pizza?
No, this was way before the pizza. This led to us getting pizza. I was just having a time.
And oh.
I was just being
good.
To the liquor store to get more bourbon, and I super glued. I exploded super glue all over my hands. Anyway, so Cygnus, home to Cygnus X1, the first escape. Yeah, I know, okay.
And yesterday had started so productive.
And then we got home and just Jameson took over.
For 2 hours.
It was just a mess. Stupid. I was bumping into stuff.
From a sliding... a screen door to super glue. Was stupid.
Anyway, but in Cygnus, there's also a nebula.
I'm sorry. Yesterday is funny.
Well, I got pizza out of it, I guess.
It was such a great start of the day, too. Okay. Anyway. Nebula.
All right. The Veil Nebula, which is visible with binoculars or a telescope. And it actually covers a huge area of the sky.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. 6 times the diameter of the moon. Okay, this nebula covers in the sky. Now, of course, you know, you can't see it with your naked eyes. Even in a dark sky, you can't see it with your naked eyes. You need, like, at least binoculars to be able to see it. But because of its breadth, people usually study it in sections or observe it in sections because it's so big to, you know... You can't really get it in the full view unless you've got, you know, some powerful stuff. But you can see it, again, with binoculars, hanging out in Cygnus, a sky map app on your phone, or, you know, there's various other tools you can use that can help you locate it if you do have the tools to go and try and look at it.
Yeah, I believe it's a little south of one of the wings.
Yeah. And this Veil Nebula is actually a supernova remnant. So it's a star that was 20 times more massive than our sun. 20 times more. A million Earths could fit inside of our sun.
Okay, now mass. Mass and size are different.
I know mass and size are different, but I'm trying to make it
Yes.
Okay, but 20 times more massive than our sun, went boom, big bada boom, 10,000 years ago, which means that ancient people could have seen it.
Yeah.
And it would have 10,000.
10,000.
So it would have looked like a very bright star all of a sudden appearing in the sky.
Yeah, because it's 1,400 light years away or something.
I didn't look up that fact.
I think it's 1,500 light years. There might be an extra zero in there, okay. But I do think it's like 1,400 light years away. And did James Webb take a picture of it?
I don't know.
I want to say Webb took a shot, obviously not in the whole thing, but
I don't know. I'll have to look that up because, I mean, anything James Webb looks at is like, oh, God, I didn't put in the news that exoplanet system it imaged.
Oh.
And it sees an asteroid belt. And then, okay. We'll bring that up and maybe we can get more, maybe we can talk more about it.
Fomalhaut.
Fomalhaut, yeah. Which is in
down south somewhere.
Okay. Anyway, so the Veil Nebula in
Federico's really the only one who can see it at this point.
Yeah. Oh, it's on the James Webb to-do list.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thank you, Jack. So 10,000 years ago, so ancient people would have seen it as this bright star that all of a sudden brightened, mm-hmm. that appeared and was really bright and then eventually faded out of view. So that's something fun. And Google the images of Veil Nebula. Every nebula, anything in space we reference, just Google the images of, but it is a beautiful looking nebula. Another concept.
That should be a drinking game. If we say Google something, it's beautiful, something. You gotta take a drink.
Just Google it, people. You know, don't even watch us. Just Google space.
No, watch us. Watch us. Please watch us.
And then Google space. Alright, so a constellation that is also starting to rise later in the evening now. It's more of a fall constellation, to be honest. It kind of traverses, you know, fall and summer. And that is Hercules!
The worst constellation.
It is. Hercules is like how anybody got Hercules out of it. It looks like, it's like a weird square with like weird arms coming off of it. I would describe it as a squished spider in the planetarium, which I got from the planetarium master right
here. That's exactly how I described it.
But yeah. Most of it's fairly bright in the night sky. So, I mean, you can, for the most part, make it out, I would say. Even in a light polluted area, you can get a good sense of it.
I think somebody saw Orion and then did some shrooms and then came up with Hercules.
My gosh.
Because it just looks,
it's going to be more in the southern part of the sky. In June, it'll be high in the sky around midnight. So later in the evening now, definitely. Again, it's more of a fall time constellation is when like earlier in the evening it's up higher. But it'll be visible in the later hours. And in Hercules, there is a star cluster called the Hercules Cluster.
M13.
This is a huge ball of stars, basically. There are several hundred thousand stars.
Oh, there's a million.
I read several hundred thousand.
Damn, okay. Let's go a million.
A million stars.
A while back, at least.
Held together by gravity. It's 12 billion years old.
And you're super glue.
It's held together by gravity and the super glue all over my hands.
It's a globular cluster. It actually orbits the...
it's in the halo of our Milky Way. So it's kind of outside the spiral arms. This is what Jack describes as a guy wearing a kilt who just walked into a spider web and arms were flapping around. Yeah, that's a good description. It's really like if I tried to draw a flailing man, I guess that would be what Hercules looks like because I just draw stick figures. So in order to get the flailing, I'd have to add arms all over. It's basically like...
weren't all the guys that were like up in the sky like basically in kilts? And,
yeah, pretty much. They're all in, like, because I think they wore, like, little kind of skirt things a lot. At least in Greece. bumped it or worried it might like topple on us because it's not affixed to the
wall. That will be the greatest ending of a show.
Speaking of Ring Nebula, actually, Ring Nebula in Lyra the Harp. Lyra, okay. Also, summertime constellation, so it's rising earlier in the evening. It looks like, we've discussed it many times, it looks like a little, like a stick, one of those little stick figure fishes, you know, or like a little weird off-center bow tie.
Mm-hmm.
Bright constellation, and the Ring Nebula is in that. You do need a telescope for the Ring Nebula, however, too.
We've seen it.
We have seen it. It's real. It doesn't look like this. It's real cool. By the way, okay, just caveat, which we've mentioned everything before, so maybe I should stop saying as we've mentioned before, but when you look at any of these nebulae or even galaxies and whatnot through a telescope, I'm going to get to that in a second on the chat, through a telescope, they're going to look like hazy black and gray, white blobs. And gray blobs. The colors are added in after, and they're added in different ways, and it depends on...
Okay, yes and no.
There is color, but we can't see the color. It's emitting a lot of wavelengths outside of what we can see.
Right.
And we also are adding in color to highlight different elements that are there, like, you know, like a blue representing right. oxygen or...
Yeah, that's if you're taking an image that's not invisible wavelengths.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you do hook up, like, a camera to the back of your telescope...
Can you get color?
You can get color.
Oh.
Yeah, but the reason why you don't get color when you look at it through a telescope is just...
Your eyeballs
is because of the way that your eyes and your brain work. So your eyes are like a camera that takes a short picture.
Right? And we don't have enough exposure.
We don't have enough exposure.
We don't have the exposure with the exposure length with our eyeballs.
Yeah, and so you hit it. Right. You hit it. You're getting that information with the rods of your eyes, and so. It's basically this black and white gray glob, but if you hook the camera up,
then
the red and the green and the blue capture those photons.
Okay, I didn't actually learn that.
Caught it.
I forgot these coasters do stick when they get condensation on them. By the way, I had a coworker that made us, this was a while ago, Cosmos of Cosmos coasters. She made them for us. April, who's amazing. She doesn't listen to us or watch this podcast, but she made this for us. Anyway, okay, that's good to know. I actually never learned that before, so that's cool. Our eyes just don't have enough. And that's why, I know we're jumping around a little bit here, but if you...
We have time.
Like pictures from the moon where people are like, it's fake because you can't see any stars. Not enough exposure time to capture the stars. These are still distant points of light and you need a longer exposure in order to capture them.
It's also a contrast thing is that the moon is so freaking bright.
That it's going to outweigh
the stars that are there in the picture. So you do have to take that, because the moon's so bright, you have to take that short picture. And you don't get the enough photons to build up on the film for you to be able to see them.
Okay, cool.
All right, you're going to get to...
Yes, okay. So Katie showed Adam, her BF boyfriend, a pic of Hercules, and he agrees that it's super funky. So, yes.
See, I thought you were going to lead right into Jax.
But there's another constellation that's up there called Bootes, the bear herder. He herds the big and little bears around the sky. Ice cream cone. And Jack says Bootes wears a space thong as prescribed by George Lucas. Bootes, I mean, he's just basically like an upside down triangle with legs and then like a weird thing on top.
I will never see it differently now. I mean, it's not true. I'll see it as an ice cream cone,
It brings maybe like their thongs back in the day. I don't know. But back to Hercules and the M13, the Hercules cluster. Okay, binoculars are a telescope, this fuzzy ball of a million stars that's super fucking old. And actually, with really dark skies, naked eye visibility.
Yes.
However, it's best to try the averted eye technique, which is where you don't, and this works with the Andromeda Galaxy as well, in the constellation of Andromeda, which is definitely more of a fall time constellation, so that's like way later in the night sky now. But you don't want to look directly at it. You actually want to try to see it out of the corner of your eye, and you'll actually pick it up better.
Yeah, that's because your rods are on the outside.
Those rods.
Yeah.
What do the cones do?
Color.
Okay.
Rods do black and white. That's why dogs have more rods in their eyes, and they can see better at night
than we can. Okay. All right. But don't see color as well. Or maybe it's
more evenly distributed.
So we got better cones.
We got better cones.
All right. Dogs are better. Anyway. Something I learned today that I didn't realize is that we actually sent a radio signal to...
I didn't know this.
To M13 from Arecibo, which is a radio telescope array in Chile.
Rest in peace.
In
Puerto Rico.
In Puerto Rico? Sorry. What's in Chile? Atacama. Atacama is Chile. Okay. Arecibo. And we sent a message to the Hercules cluster with all of our private human information, our DNA, what we look like, how we are, where Earth is, what Earth's like. Like, same thing with the Voyager record. Like, we're just sending all this personal data out to who knows what is out there.
How did that work out with Independence Day?
Right? Like, maybe it'd be a little bit more...
selective in the information you send
up.
Maybe tell them it's the fourth planet from the sun that has a life on it.
Just in case. And also maybe not send information of what our DNA is. The building blocks to our life. Let's not send that information out over an unsecured universe server. I'm just saying.
No, this was in the 1970s that we did this.
This was in 1974. And it really wasn't actually like a serious message. Like, they weren't really...
But it's the ultimate security breach.
Yeah, it was more of a test of the tech... Or a demonstration of our technology at the time. But it's going to take 25,000 years for that signal to reach the Hercules cluster, because it's 25,000 light years away.
Minus the 30 since they sent it.
And that means that anything that wants to send a message back is going to take another 25,000 years once they decide. If they decide, if there's something there to send anything back, it will take that long. So... Yeah.
No one's
coming anytime soon.
No, when I used to talk about M13 in Plantain shows, I didn't have a way to actually show this, but I did try to say, okay, imagine you're on a planet around one of these stars. Mm-hmm. No matter where you are, well, that's not true, but you're... All right, so you're on a planet around one of the stars in M13. You never experience nighttime. You have the sun during the daytime, your sun during the daytime.
But if there's millions of stars,
and they're all tightly bound together, then your night just explodes with stars, and there's so much light that's coming from all these different stars.
Imagine
from all these
how
different
that
directions.
Would affect evolutionary processes.
Oh, I know, right? I know. Because we would have to take blackout windows with us, you know, just so that we can sleep.
Jack says aliens have decided to swipe right on Earth. They're 100%. They should swipe. Wait.
It's left, right? Right. I don't know, but right is I like you. Left is we're gonna pass.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know which directions are, but
they should just do the whatever the negative is, because we're not ready. All right, but anyway, so if you have dark skies or binoculars or telescope, Hercules has the Beehive Cluster hanging out in it. Or I'm sorry, not the Beehive Cluster. That's next. The M13, the Hercules Cluster.
Nice segue though to the next one.
The next one though. All right, we're gonna kick off June. With Mars, god of war, hanging out in Cancer, the crab, not the...
This looks like a big upside down Y.
not the evil cancer. It does look like an upside down Y. It's a dim constellation though, so dark sky is really for Cancer.
Most anything associated with water is dim.
But Mars will be in Cancer in the beginning of June, means nothing for your personal life. And it's actually going to be hanging out with another star cluster called the Beehive Cluster.
I've never been able to see a swarm of bees with it. I see the beehive. And so I think the name came from, it looks like a swarm of bees. But I've never been able to make that leap in my brain.
It's because the swarm of bees are by their beehive.
Yeah, but there's nothing that looks like it'd be like a beehive.
Okay, well, it's the Beehive Cluster. Binoculars or telescope are what you need. And actually, this Cancer the Crab is just above the Gemini twins, Castor and Pollux. So this is kind of northwest of Castor, the stars Castor and Pollux, which are the two brightest stars in Gemini.
In my zodiac sign.
Cancer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It means nothing.
I know. My grandpa's, Papa Dave, rest in peace.
What was that look?
I don't know how to be like, yeah. He's not alive anymore.
Rest in peace.
Pour one out. Let's just pour one on the floor for him.
Oh, no.
Papa Dave, the best. He's a Gemini. His birthday's in June.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then there will be a full moon on June 4th, as far as the other kickoff June events. Kickoff June.
Nice.
Is check out some bees and get a full moon. But don't look directly at that full moon through a telescope without a moon
filter. Or at least,
filter.
Yeah. I mean, it's the big telescopes that are going to cause problems, real problems. But it's just best if you're looking at it a full moon through a telescope, put a lunar filter on there.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, so that's what's high in the sky coming up. Some little features for you. Now on to some astronomy news.
Astronomy news.
I should get like a little graphic. I should make a little news graphic.
But that was not like a 1930s.
It was. It could be.
It sounded very circusy or fair like. It's
Okay. Anyway, we're gonna get started with some volcanoes. On an exoplanet.
Oh, but not here in Oregon?
No. This is plenty of volcanoes near us. Recently...
my flight from Seattle to Eugene is just nothing but volcanoes.
Welcome to the Ring of Fire. Or part of it, anyway. But TESS, the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, found an exoplanet, an Earth-sized exoplanet, LP 791-18D.
D.
Which means it is the A, B, C, D.
No, it's the B, C, D.
Oh, there's no A?
No, the A is the star.
Oh.
It's the third planet.
In the system. Now, it's in the southern constellation, southern hemisphere in the constellation of Crater, which is actually a small cup used for wine. So it's basically a goblet constellation, is what it is. But it's covered at this planet, Earth-sized, covered in volcanoes, and similar volcanic activity to Io, one of Jupiter's largest moons. And Io is the most volcanically active object in our solar system. It has over 400 active volcanoes.
Do you know that why?
Because the other two planets hanging out in the same system, they are very close together, and they pull gravitationally. They have this huge tidal effect on this other planet, and that's similar to Io as well, because the other large moons of Jupiter, they do this, and Jupiter itself do this sort of tug and pull on Io, the moon, creating a lot of internal heat and friction, generating that volcanic activity. And so that's what's happening with this planet, is that it's getting this tug and pull from these other planets orbiting their star, and it's generating all this volcanic activity, this internal heat system.
Yeah, see, planet C, the second planet, 7 times the mass of the Earth. So really pulling on... really pulling on.
It's got a bigger tug.
Got a bigger tug when it passes by it. Mm-hmm. But like Io, I think the tidal displacement is something like 40 feet. It's like you go up and down 40 feet.
That is huge
on Io.
Huge.
Yeah, no wonder it's so volcanically active. And the same for this planet right here.
I mean, that's a lot of activity, so.
I just think it's cool that, like, we see and we understand Io.
Uh-huh.
And what's going on. And then we use that information to really quite understand.
Planetary comparativology. I think
it's a perfect way of doing it. And I think they put it now on Webb's to-do list.
So it's going to, I don't think it's looking at that planet, though.
Let's see.
It's going to look at C. Yeah, it's going to look at a different planet.
Yeah, because with D being so volcanically active, they think that means that it most likely is going to have an atmosphere and you'd be able to study the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And even though D is tidally locked.
I forgot to mention that. It's tidally locked, so only one side faces its star.
Yeah,
always.
As it goes around. But it is on the inner edge of the habitable zone for that star. So that means that, like, if you're on the night side, you might have temperatures that, kind of on about near that Terminator line, but a little bit more on the night side.
Yeah.
The temperatures might be enough to where you can have liquid water on the surface and stuff like that. And so,
would you have earthquakes all the time? Not earthquakes, but
you're gonna
planetary
have
quakes all the time. But, I mean, that kind of just that.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be so many earthquakes.
Yeah.
It's going to be happening all the time.
Not a fun planet to possibly live on.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody is saying that there's, like, people living there.
Yeah, no.
So that's not being said. But, if there is life there, they're shaking and sloshing around.
It's more like, check out this crazy shit that's happening.
Yeah.
Is what it is. Speaking of, then, we'll need to get, I didn't look up the article, but James Webb did take an image of a planetary system, Fomalhaut's planetary system. I can't remember how many planets are orbiting Fomalhaut. But it captured actually an asteroid belt.
Yeah.
Within the system, and this is the first extrasolar asteroid belt.
Yeah, that has been captured. Right, but to be fair, we knew that it had an asteroid belt.
But we didn't see it.
Right. So we knew that it had an asteroid belt with some land base, like at down in Chile,
Atacama.
However, the James Webb. Basically, I think it said that it's in three parts. So there were parts to this asteroid belt that we did not even know about.
Wow.
And it's actually much fucking larger than we thought.
Wow.
Like, really extending way beyond what would be Neptune's orbit here.
Wow.
So
that's
it's a huge asteroid belt. And it's all because James Webb can see infrared, microwave.
You can see what we can't.
Yeah, and it's so powerful that it actually could see even further out.
Yeah, and so the image, and you see these different rings in the system. Yeah. I mean, it's really, it's a wonder of science.
I mean, really. We're in an amazing time right now where we have James Webb. And, Webb and Hubble, but I'm gonna say the great observatory, so Hubble,
Chandra,
Spitzer, Chandra, Webb now, showing us the universe in all these different wavelengths. Mm-hmm. The Compton Observatory, which is gamma rays, and so Chandra does X-ray. So really, we really are getting a view of the universe that we just did not have. Mm-hmm. Like 40 years ago.
Well, we have to have this technology utilize the different, or be able to see in these different wavelengths, because we can't. Like, we have to put on special glasses in order to see everything. And if we don't have glasses for a specific thing, then we miss out on, that's information, that's data that we don't have and don't know about.
Yeah. And, I mean, within, 6 years or so with Hubble, we had already found dark energy. And I mean, Hubble had already rewritten the textbooks mm-hmm. on astronomy mm-hmm. Within, you know, a decade mm-hmm. of it being launched. Mm-hmm. What are we going to learn from Webb, which is so much more powerful than Hubble mm-hmm. And these other observatories? Mm-hmm. What are we going to learn? I think that we've rewritten the textbooks with Hubble within a decade of its launch. I think we're going to have to rewrite textbooks within a decade of mm-hmm. Webb. And we don't know what we don't know. So it's going to be just a really fun ride to see what happens. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's my soapbox moment.
All right. Well done. Well, let's bring it a little bit closer to home to some astronomy news. We have a new reigning king of moons.
Yes, we do. Made me happy.
Saturn. Famous for those rings, now also famous for the most moons in the solar system and the most moons that we have detected around another cosmological body anywhere. And that is Saturn, which it had 82 moons, but we just found 62 more moons. It has over 100 moons, like 120.
Yeah, it was 120, 140, whatever. No, it's got to be 140 something if it was 60. Yeah, it's like, so we just found those moons of Jupiter, and Saturn's like, hold my fucking beer.
So I was like, no.
Hold my beer.
Wait a
That's
minute.
So cute with your 12 moons you discovered Jupiter.
Edward Ashton, who's a postdoctoral fellow at the Academia Sinica Institute of Astronomy and Astrophysics, through the Canada-France-Hawaii Telescope on top Big of Mauna Kea in Hawaii. And they use the shift and stack technique because these moons are small, so they're hard to spot. Obviously, we haven't been able to find them for a long time. Davison's hitting again. So basically what it is that they're taking images that are shifting at the same speed at which the moon moves through the sky to enhance the signal mm-hmm. from the moon. And so moons that are too faint to be seen in a single image can then be seen once you stack those images on top of each other. That's how they were able to find them. And these are all irregular moons. That means they didn't form with Saturn. They were captured by Saturn. Saturn's just plucking fucking moons out of the fucking solar system. Just like, I want you to fuck up the moon. And so they orbit Saturn at a very elliptical orbit.
I think at least some of them are backwards.
Some possibly backwards, that makes sense. And then inclined off the plane of our solar system. So not in the same plane means that's definitely a telltale sign that something didn't form at the same time as
Yeah, it was captured. System. And if it goes backwards, it definitely was not part of the original system.
So go Saturn.
Yeah, I was thinking about this today, mm-hmm. actually. It's like, okay, so I'm Team Saturn. I don't know why at all I want Saturn to have more moons than Jupiter.
Because Jupiter's already the biggest planet.
You know,
got your big red spotlight.
I did come down on that.
Also,
like,
Jupiter's also the Roman name of Zeus and a little rapey,
yeah. But, to me, I mean, Saturn's my favorite planet. The rings are amazing.
Is it your favorite planet?
I will never forget.
Brandon was here. He could show off his, too.
Yeah, I will never forget the first time I saw it through a telescope.
Oh, my God. It's an absolutely amazing telescope. The first time I saw it was not through that telescope that we have, but...
Yeah, and, you know, there's things that are transformational. Mm-hmm. I am not a religious person. I know that is a shock.
What?
I know that is a shock to a lot of people.
Oh my God.
I know you might have to rethink everything, but I am not a religious person, but seeing Saturn through a telescope.
Oh, that's
it was as close to a religious experience as I've had. It's the first time I saw it. And I still get chills looking at it through a telescope.
It's beautiful.
Even in a small telescope.
Oh, no, yeah. Even in a small telescope. My 4-inch telescope, I've looked at it through that small ass thing, and it is, it's unreal, because it really is just like, oh, crap, you see the colors, you can see the rings, and it's And even, I mean, Jupiter with that small telescope, and you can see the bands, and you can see the moons, its largest moon traverse in front of it. I mean, it's really, anybody that, if there is, like, any kind of star party that is near where you live,
I recommend you
going to a star party at least once in your life, because you have people there that... amateur astronomers that bring their telescopes and have good, decent telescopes.
Yeah, and they're passionate.
And you can see things that you really, that the general public really doesn't have a way of seeing unless you go to an observatory. Like, you go do, like, maybe a night tour at Kitt Peak Observatory in Arizona, or, you know, these other things that you pay for. Whereas usually star parties are usually free. You can show up.
Yeah.
And you can take a look through the telescopes.
And these, the people, they're more than excited, more than happy.
They want you to look through their scope.
They want you.
It can be suspicious how bad they want you to look through their scope, but just look through it.
Yeah, they, you will not be disappointed.
Now, if anybody walks up to you jingling in their pocket saying they want to show you some space rocks.
Okay, there's a story. That's an
inside joke for Mike that I brought that up, but I'm just making a joke. You don't need to explain that.
Oh, but it's a creepy situation.
We can say that for the hangover. Yep. Anyway, speaking of Saturn, new research also shows, and I didn't do a lot of digging into this because this is just kind of a little caveat, a little supplemental, if you will. Captain's log, supplemental. But Saturn's rings may be younger than previously thought and may only be 400 million years old.
Yeah, so Saturn's rings are transient. They're not... It's not.
They're
like,
not sticking around.
No,
they won't be there forever.
We are, and Saturn's rings did not form with the planet. It's not like Saturn formed with these rings around.
It's most likely that a moon got too close, and Saturn's gravity ripped it apart, basically, and the debris formed the rings.
Yeah, and you know, and so we just happen to be alive. At the right time, right place.
And I mean, there are some moons that debris from them is contributing to some of the outer rings, like the E ring or something. Mm-hmm. There's like a moon particles that are...
like Enceladus, where that's...
Enceladus has, you know, its stuff coming out.
That
material is eventually going to all fall into Saturn, much like...
Or it's going to move out.
Spacecraft.
It's going to disperse away.
Yeah, so they won't always be here. I didn't write it down, but there is an estimate on how long the rings are going to last. Well, throughout our lifetime, though. So, folks, don't get discouraged. You have your entire life to see those rings.
Yeah, and you know, your great, 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 great...
We'll also be able to see those rings. It's going
to
take a long time.
Galileo saw them. He didn't know he saw them, but he saw them.
No. But 400 million years old. So I think before it was like they were formed closer to the formation of the solar system. So much, much older. And so this new research is saying, well, actually, and it was actually using the Cassini mission and dust samples collected, data from dust samples collected, and analyzing those dust samples to get like carbon dating and whatnot from them.
Yeah, the solar system had been around for 4.1 billion years before those rings formed. Pretty much. If they're 400 million years old. Mm-hmm. 4.1 billion years. Or how many times did Saturn have rings and then those rings disappear and then come back? And then did the Earth have rings and then have it disappear?
What's had rings and we don't know that? Yeah. I mean, look, Jupiter has a thin ring. Uranus has rings.
All the gas giants.
Neptune has a thin ring.
Mm-hmm.
Neptune has a thin ring.
Yeah, they call them ringlets, but it's solid. But when you look at it, it looks like it's not solid.
So rings actually tend to be pretty much a common factor, at least for our solar system. They seem to be kind of a thing, you know. So expect more planets out in the universe to have rings.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, moving on. Also closer to home. Blue Origin's Blue Moon is going to be the second Artemis lander for the Artemis program. This is SpaceX's star ship is for like these early missions to the moon and getting humans to and back from the moon. But Blue Origin, which is what, Bezos?
Blue Origin, yes.
So it's Bezos, one of the billionaires.
It's a big penis rocket.
It does look like a big dick. It is intended for a crewed Artemis 5 mission launching in 2029. This is the mission that is basically going to move NASA into like a yearly pattern of
landing
on the moon. And it can carry 50 tons or 45 metric tons of fuel.
Okay, that's a lot of fuel.
It features an upper deck communications array, hydrogen tank, oxygen tank, solar array, docking adapter, and room for four astronauts. Four lucky contenders to the moon.
Yeah, and what's cool about these missions is all four of them get to land.
Yeah.
Unlike the Apollo missions.
Yeah, they're actually...
They all get to go down. You go up, you go down.
Touching down on the moon. The contract price is $3.4 billion, which is nothing compared to how much money our military spends.
No.
And Blue Origin is actually contributing...
I think I just heard Leia cartoon it.
Oh, I didn't hear it. Blue Origin is actually contributing more than that amount to the funding.
Okay. But, so, I mean, they have the money.
Definitely have the money.
They have the money.
So Blue Origin is the...
Well, good for them. Good for them. I mean, I'm not a big fan of billionaires in space, but good for them.
No, but, you know, if it gets astronauts to the moon, which is more than just the governmental agency can do at this point.
We need the capitalists
to step in.
I'm all for that.
All right. But if you would like to participate in some space research.
I want to do that.
You can do it when you're bored, when you got nothing to do. You can just hang out. You can be a little amateur astronomical researcher, basically. The University of Arizona researchers are needing people to help them hunt for asteroids. Zooniverse, which is a...
Z-O-O-N.
Like Zooniverse.
Yeah.
It's a platform for people around the world to be involved with astronomical research. You can sign up for an account, and there is there's actually various different things you can do with Zooniverse. You can count craters on the moon. You can do whatever. But the University of Arizona, they're using the Catalina Sky Survey to look for asteroids. And, I mean, there's a ton of images that scientists, you know, these researchers can't look through every single image that's out there. And so, you know, ones that they have computers that can like flag some of them, but there's others that maybe get swept to the sidelines. And so they're saying, hey, if anybody's interested, you can sign up on Zooniverse and you can be a part of our project and look through these images that we haven't been able to look through to look for asteroids and comets, which is important because asteroids and comets are a threat to our existence. There's a lot of them, especially asteroids flying around in space. A lot of them that are designated as NEOs or near Earth asteroids. And this thing, my iPad was at 45% and now it's at 5%. Anyway, you can help them look through these images and spot what you think are potentially asteroids and comets. And it doesn't matter if you're wrong. It's based on the amount of people looking and the more people that are like highlighting the same thing as a potential candidate, then can get, you know, looked at further by the professionals to verify or not. You're called a citizen scientist. And three of them have actually discovered 64 possible candidates.
I want to be a citizen scientist.
You can.
I don't say that facetiously.
If you're sitting around bored and you're just like, I don't know what to do right now, you can sign up on Zooniverse and look through fucking astronomical photos and look for shit. You know?
So your dad, instead of watching golf,
he can just look through different sky survey photos looking for asteroids.
That'll make your mom happy.
And it may be something and it may be nothing, but you know, it's something that you can do to participate. If you're feeling like you want to participate, it's fine, in astronomical research, but, you know, you're not an astronomer, you don't have that education, you don't have that background, you don't really know what you're doing, this is a way you can get involved.
Yep.
So, Zooniverse. And
so sign up and do
it. I don't know what the actual specific project is, but it's from the University of Arizona.
So look it up and do it.
We have a little in memoriam section. And this is not for a recently departed.
No.
This is a remembrance. A remembrance of Skylab.
Which I saw.
Skylab, the first American space station, was launched on May 14th, 1973, on the final Saturn V rocket.
Oh, the last one.
The last Saturn V rocket. We have had nothing powerful since to take us back to the moon until this Artemis and Starship, or the Blue Origins and SpaceX bullshit.
Yeah, well, yeah, the
because the older Artemis one. The older astronauts all died, and NASA lost plans, and we didn't know how to make another Saturn V.
But anyway,
Skylab launched 50 years ago.
Oh, wow.
50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
As of May 14th. Obviously, this is airing, and we're doing this live after May 14th. 50 years ago, and it returned back to Earth in the Australian outback in July of 1979.
Yep, I'll never forget it going over my house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Apparently, it was plagued with a bunch of problems in the beginning. A lot of heat. They had to, like, reorient to, like, a sunshade because they were getting too hot inside. But it was really kind of just a test of establishing a human presence in space. And that paved the way for the International Space Station.
That and like Mir and whatever else the Russians had going on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We're not happy with Russia.
Right? No, but they did play a significant role in all this.
Russia has played a significant role in space
exploration. And all of that was prior to Putin. It was communist.
Yes.
But anyway.
All
right.
Anyway, that's all we got for High in the Sky.
We got
High in the Sky. We got some good astronomy news. We got things to look at. We got things you can do from your tablet or laptop while you're bored.
Yeah, we got. Yeah, so it was a good show.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what are we going to do in 2 weeks?
I don't know.
We're doing an award-winning topic. We're doing what everybody has been looking forward to all season long.
What?
Astrology.
Oh, shit.
I got my water sitting under the moon. We're going to be making some moon.
We're doing it.
Astrology. In 2 weeks.
And get ready for Angry Liz rants.
Yes.
But also, prepare to have your horoscope read.
Yes. But the thing is like Brandon was like, I'm going to go head-to-head against Liz. I'm like, all right, let's do it.
With what?
I think he's going to play devil's advocate.
Okay.
for some
yes! Real content. Astrology.
Yeah, and I think in 2 weeks after that, in mid-June, we should do, because it's Pride Month, Space Gaze.
Space Gaze.
We should do Space Gaze.
Space Gaze. I like that.
As the High in the Sky.
How many space gays have there been?
Oh.
So many space
gays. All of them are gay up there. So
everybody's happy in space.
Everybody's happy in space, yeah. So
all right. I like this. Astrology and then space gays.
And then in July, who knows what we're going to do. But we're working on it. Working on the list.
That's great. So thanks for joining us, everyone. If you're with us currently, stick around for the hangover.
Yes.
All right. But if you're listening to us, not live and everything, again, thanks for joining us. Stick around or check us out again for the next episode that we have. Astrology followed by Space Gaze. Check out The Shot on Cosmos.
We can make some more. We can make some
more shot-sized sips of astronomy and space science. And we'll see you next time.
Cheers, everybody.